You've just joined the Prepper Broadcasting Network, where we promote self-reliance and independence. The views and opinions expressed are strictly those of the host or their guests. Visit us in the interactive chat room at PrepperBroadcasting.com.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls. It is your host, Freddie, and we have another night of a family affair. Actually, I have some internet issue today, so if I get choppy or anything with my audio, let me know. I do have my standby set now so I can go ahead and switch over. All right, so tonight, I have an awesome guest for you. It is choppy. You know what? Just a second, bear with me. Okay.
Let's see. That should be better. Except I have an echo. Let me remove my echo. Oh, Lord. How did I turn that on? Sorry, y'all. There we go. Okay. Is that any better? The echo should be gone. Is the echo gone now? If it is not, let me know. Okay. So tonight, I have a great guest for you. It is none other than Samantha Biggers with Backdoor Survival. She is their head writer right now. Awesome. All right. So let me bring her on. See if you're there. Miss Samantha, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you now. It's no echo or anything.
Yay. All right. I had a feeling I was going to have some computer issues today. So.
I was a little worried about the storm.
Yes. Oh, same. Our storm my internet actually went out maybe 30, not even 30 minutes before that. I had to reboot my computer and internet just to make sure it was going to connect. All right, so let me pull up my other stuff here with all that rebooting. I forgot to pull up half my information. But tonight, everybody, we have a great guest, and I titled it the way I did for a reason, because being able to live the dream, we all have a dream of how we'd like to live. We all have something that we aspire to as a family, as an individual, especially those as who are preppers or even want a self-sufficient lifestyle. And I know it is one for me, myself, as well as, you know, when living the dream is an option, it's very much a serious thing on my end. And I feel like it was the only title that could honestly represent who Samantha is, especially with the fact that she is getting to live a dream, no matter how hard it is and how much work it takes. She is striving even more and more to achieve that dream for her, in which we all have. And showing it that it's an option has been absolutely inspiring. So, Ms. Samantha, I don't know how well I've done as far as giving you any sort of justice, but would you mind giving our listeners a little bit more about yourself? Because I know I've left quite a bit out.
Well, I live in the mountains of North Carolina on a small homestead, about 3,000-foot elevation. We grow, like, gourmet mushrooms, the shiitakes and the amico and lion's mane, and we also grow a lot of wine grapes. We have 1,600 grapevines we've planted over the years, and that's going kind of slow because that's just how grapes are. We've got Shetland sheep and geese and chickens, dogs, cats. We've had a variety of livestock over the years. I didn't always write about this stuff as much as I do now, but I did write a few articles for, like, Backwoods Home and Grit and magazines like that over the years before Backdoor Survival.
No, I think that's great. I actually read quite a few of your articles, and I have to say, you know, some of them hit quite at home, as well as a few of them had some very emotional attachments to them that I just, it was to put yourself in that much of your writing. It just, it's really awe. Because, you know, that's a lot to do, is to give yourself in your writing as much as you do, but to show that how you feel about your writing. I mean, that just, you can tell you're serious about what you do.
Yeah, I've been writing a long time, off and on. You know, there's been years I went without writing very much at all. I just, when I was a teenager and such, but when I got to college and took a few writing classes just as electives and got back into it a little bit, and then drifted away again to work and graduating college. And then what really drove you back to writing again? Part of it was just, I always liked to do it, and I just kind of did a few articles here and there for the magazines about what we were doing here. My parents had always, you know, Mother's News was laying around when I was a kid with my dad and stuff, and I just did that, and then all of a sudden, you know, the internet made it possible to write more, and there were more opportunities, and it just kind of took off. I did work as a financial planner or a financial planning assistant for a while, and 2008 rolled around, and we moved back to North Carolina from Alaska, and I was telecommuting, and the recession happened, and I lost my job, and so I just started writing more. But it took years before I really did it a lot. That's kind of just what got me back into it.
Hold on. I have a few questions here. I just want to make sure I don't go too crazy with them or bog you down with them all.
Oh, no, go ahead.
So you were mentioning, though, that you raise mushrooms. What got you onto the mushrooms, though? Because that right there, you know what, I guess I should start out is what motivated you and your husband to actually have a homestead? Is this a dream yourself, or is this something where y'all felt like it was the right thing for y'all as a family?
Well, my family had land in North Carolina, and my dad had acreage he wasn't using. And it was going to be passed on. It was like, well, we could just let it set, and we could hang out in Alaska and spend all our money on rent. And just everything was just so expensive up there. So, and my dad was getting older and having health problems, and so it was my grandma, and he was trying to take care of her, and we came back here, and we stayed down there at their house for a little bit, and then we got a tent, and then we got a $300 Holiday Rambler camper with no power, no plumbing, and we stayed in that for 18 months and 2 winters while we worked on the shell of the house. And
wow.
One day I was like, we just move in the house. Let's just move in the house. And we moved into the house too early. We really did, because we got delayed with stuff. And there was a little while there was no insulation in the house. And I was like, oh, wow. I jumped the gun here about moving into the house, because the house was up the hill where we were building, but it was worth it. And we were raising pigs at the time, too. We had pastured pigs trying to clear the place because it was just so overgrown. My family had cattle, and after my grandfather passed away in the 80s, but besides that, then the drought came, and then I think it was in the early 2000s, and they sold off the cattle, and it just was overgrown. So it took a long time to get it clear, and honestly, we've just now got the woods, like the understory, cleared out the way we want it and stuff. So it took a long time.
Well, I mean, a homestead is a constant work anyways, but to be able to get it, y'all, as you mentioned before, though, you guys were building it completely by yourselves, were you not? It was you and your husband building it.
Yeah. He had some carpentry experience and did some masonry work with his father when he was really young and when he was a teenager, but we'd never built a house before, and we had just come back from Alaska, and we had office jobs up there. We actually weren't in the greatest of shape. It took a while to get back into shape, and you know, and the learning curve and dealing with regulations and permits. Some people are like, well, let's build a house somewhere where there's not permits. Like, it all, that really doesn't exist hardly anymore. You know, if you're going to build a house, if you don't build it to code, then if you ever want to, it's not considered a house in the eyes of the government. So you basically have land, and so
inspect it.
Yeah, there's a lot of inspections. I think there's like 12 or 13 to build a house. So, and some stuff you can't do yourself. Usually that's just septic tank about it here, but everything else you can do yourself.
Wow. All right, so now I see the chat is actually blowing up about your about mushrooms. So I guess, you know, what I had mentioned that right before I jumped on my question, so we may have to go back to what inspired y'all to do the mushrooms. What got y'all into growing them? And real quick, though, if you are on Blog Talk Radio, hop over into PrepperBroadcasting.com. We have a chat here that you can join. Miss Sam herself is in the chat as well with quite a few of our listeners, and join in on the conversation. All right. So what made y'all decide to start doing mushrooms?
It's one of the things you can do with your woodlot. We had so many like stunted trees that we had 80-year-old chestnut oaks up here that were a foot thick. And
wow.
they had to go. You know, they weren't, we had some stagnation in the trees, and there was just a lot of clearing to do. And actually at Warren Wilson College, where we both went to school, they grew shiitake mushrooms a lot. And that's where I learned to grow them. My husband, Matt, when he was younger, his parents grew a few too. But it's one way to get protein and food out of your woods, and you can use the branches that you don't want to use for firewood. I mean, you know, you have to have at least like a 4-inch.
It helps break down, right?
Yeah, and bigger logs will produce longer and such. And we just had so many trees. Like, we were burning firewood, and my dad burned, you know, wood. So, but there was just so much, and we wanted to grow some food too. And we actually would sell some mushroom logs to help get a little extra money.
Wow. Yeah, someone in the
oyster
chat.
Mushrooms grow really well too.
Okay. See, one of our listeners actually says that he doesn't eat bread. He uses large ports for buns. So they are loving the whole mushroom talk, I promise you.
There's still some really great ones out there. We've actually started growing like Namiko. They use those in like as a base for miso soup. I'm probably not pronouncing it right, but and then oyster mushrooms grow really well on poplar. You know, different trees grow different types, and the Namiko is kind of nice because you can grow it on cherry. So that's, we've had some pretty good luck with that. We're trying lion's mane because it's supposed to taste like seafood, and we've only got a couple because they take a long time to get going, but they do kind of taste a little bit like lobster.
Really? I will be
yeah.
honest, I have probably not eaten much as far as on the mushrooms. I would love to. Like Volcana was saying here in the chat, we see people who wildcraft them, but I couldn't bring myself to do it because one mistake. I like the fact that you grow your own, and you have so many that I would love to try them. Oh, here we go. Good question. Are all yours grown outside or are some of them grown inside?
All outside, just in the understory of the woods. We've got some mushroom logs that we did 10 years ago that are still producing off and on because they were big and the wood was really
wow.
dense. The denser the oak that you're using, it breaks down slower. And they decrease in volume, you know, over time. You're not going to get as many off of a log. But I was actually really surprised that after 10 years that we still get some mushrooms off some of those.
Highlander asks, do you expose them to the sun so they absorb D?
They get some sun, you know, in the understory, but you want to keep them kind of shaded and, you know, damp. Most of ours are self-fruiting, so some mushroom strains, you have to soak the logs to get them to really fruit. And you can, if you add extra water to them, keep them wetter, they're going to fruit better. But we try to keep the, you know, it's just in the understory. So the sunlight varies depending on the season.
Right. I think that, let me see. Checking both the chat and jumping over. All right. The sheep, what got you into the sheep? Was that a choice from moving away from the pigs or just a
the pigs we had to get away from because they caused erosion. You know, they were a good start. They really till up things, and we run them in the woods, which people used to do around here all the time back in the old Jobers Road days and such. But we went on to, we had goats for a while, but goats are just so hard to fence and so mischievous.
No.
I had goats when I was a teenager. Goats are delicious to eat, but they're crazy. I loved them at the same, you know, like raising them sometimes, and they're really cute. But a goat has an attitude of, if it's spur, the harder it is to reach, the tastier it is. So what ended it with the goats was when they knocked over a tree, put it onto the field fence, like we have a woven wire field fence with an electric wire. They shorted out the fence,
oh, no.
Crawled over, and then got into our grapes. And I was like, no.
No, see, I understand.
We have little short sheep. They're 2 feet high. They eat under the grapevines, but they don't eat the, we can turn them in there certain times of year, and they help eat under the grapevines so we don't have to mow and weed quite as much. We don't use Roundup under our grapevines like a lot of people do, so, and it's really steep, so sometimes we were like weed eating an acre before we got like a steep slope mower.
Oh, wow. Melinda Lee in chat asked, have you ever had an unwanted mushroom spore enter your growing area?
You can tell the difference. Like the ones we grow, you can tell the difference pretty easily between the wild ones around here. And you can get mushrooms in the understory that are not something you want to eat. You can get logs that will get something growing on them. But you can tell the difference pretty easy. It can happen. And we definitely have some, like, oyster mushroom, like, logs. And the totems are when you stack, like, two big rounds and you smash mushroom spawn in between them. And then they fruit out of that. And we've had some get other funguses in there, but they'll still fruit oyster mushrooms. It would be nice if they weren't.
We have another question for you. Sorry.
Okay.
They're popping in, and they're great questions. So Volcana asked, you mentioned sheep in your forest. Is your property fenced, or do they go everywhere? And as a supplementary, so on a secondary question, if they aren't, or if they are not fenced, do they come home like cows?
We fenced our entire property. We have 11 acres up here and, like, 4 foot high, like, cattle fencing. Like, it's, like, woven wire field fence. So, and we have different lots. We have divider fences, and we'll just move them where we want them that time of year and rotate them through. Like, we'll put them in the woods when the grapes are leafed out a lot or they're fruiting so that they don't eat them. At some point, we'll be able to probably graze the sheep in there when they're bigger, but some of our vines aren't really high on the trellis yet. And the idea is when they do get up, because we do a high wire trellis. It's like 6 feet, 5.5 feet.
Oh, wow.
It's about 5.5 feet for 5 feet, somewhere in there. And so the idea is that one day the sheep will be able to eat more of the year in the vineyard. But right now we have to rotate them depending on, you know, the season. I recommend if you have property, if you can afford to fence it right away, that's the way to go. When we were starting out, we were 20 in our 20s, and we were broke, and we had wanted electric fence, and an electric fence is great to start off with because it gives you a start. But it shorts out, and if you've got the money and the time, fence your whole place with a 4-foot-high fence or something where you can keep your animals and livestock in it, and you'll save yourself a lot of hassle in the long term. But sometimes you got to do what you got to do.
Right. I have a quick question for you, though. As far as with it only being a 4-foot-high fence, how do you deal with coyotes or predatorial animals?
I have Great Pyrenees dogs. And yeah, we have 3 Great Pyrenees, and then we've got a lab and squirrel dog cross. So he runs around with some too. And they, you know, between the fences and the Pyrenees, and a lot of people hunt around here, we really haven't had any problems with coyotes. We've had geese when they get like right on the fence line, and they'll stick their heads through. And if there's a lot of brush on like the other side from the neighbors or something, we've had like bobcats and stuff get geese, but it's pretty rare.
Oh, wow. See, unfortunately here, it's quite common with the coyotes. I've actually lost an entire cage full of rabbits, of Angora rabbits I was raising. And the coyotes are relentless for tearing through wire and fences here, as well as raccoons and any other animal that will decide they want what you have.
Yeah, coyotes used to be a problem here, but just keeping the dogs really takes care of it. And yeah, if it comes down to other varmints and stuff, you can keep a shotgun around or something, but it really doesn't come up that much. The dogs usually just, you know, they keep it run off. So we used to lose stuff more. We did, but now with the fencing and the dogs, it's gotten better. We used to have a real skunk problem up here. Now those are terrible.
Oh no!
It's like skunks will get like kill all your rabbits. They'll get into everything. And then one of our Great Pyrenees decided she had a vendetta against skunks and started hunting them. She got skunked like 3 or 4 times, and it's just awful. So.
Oh no. So with the whole dog thing, did you look into Great Pyrenees before you started building, or was that something you looked into after?
I got my first Great Pyrenees when I moved to North Carolina when I was about, I think I barely turned 17 when I got my first Great Pyrenees. I saved up my Christmas money and I got the Pyrenees, and I got a $20 goat and I started raising goats.
Right.
I couldn't have one, of course, when I went to Alaska or in college, but my dad kept my dog for a while when I was in college, and I've pretty much always had them since then. They're good dogs. They can be a little aggressive at times because they're a guard dog, but they're calm with people, and they're good with little animals and such. All of our Pyrenees, they love cats. Like, they'll just cuddle up with their cats, and they just, it's kind of funny. And
no,
then
it's
the
funny
sheep.
That you say that.
Yeah.
Because my friend has a Great Pyrenees, and he, if he's not out playing with the pigs or keeping an eye on all the her sheep, and he's usually cuddled up near the garage with the cat. So it's funny that you say that, because he loves that cat.
Well, they're trained to guard little things, and I had a bottle baby sheep that she's in all the pictures on that you put up on the site, and she thinks she's a dog because they raised her. Her mother rejected her, and I had to feed her on a bottle, but the dogs are what hung out with her, and now she, like, runs with them, and she'll go with the other sheep, kind of, but then she's always trying to barge in and hang out with the dogs. So she can be a little bit annoying.
It's
she's cute, but she's
No, I think that's great. I love hearing about it. You know, for me, having your own little homestead for me is definitely a goal. Having that bit of self-sufficiency, or, you know, a little more self-reliance than everything else, even though I know there are going to be things that we need that we will have to get, you know, we can get from public everyday conveniences, but Yeah, I love hearing this. But what we're going to do is we're going to go ahead and take a quick break. I'm going to run a few commercials, and then when we go back, I am going to keep asking you a bunch more questions I have, and then let some of the listeners in our chat see if they have anything they wanted to ask you about. So give me just a moment,
and
we will be right back.
As Prepper Broadcasting listeners, you already know that the more self-reliant people we have around, the better off we'll be in a disaster. That's why we started Prepper.org. The mission? Bring top survival, prepping, and homesteading experts under one roof to share their knowledge with as many Americans as possible. I want you to go to Prepper.org/PBN. We've got a free survival basics guide for you by the one and only Ron Foster. That's Prepper.org/PBN. Prepper.org/PBN.
Have you visited SurvivalGearSystems.com? At SGS, we focus on and deliver today's most innovative high-tech survival gear and complete survival systems. Survival Gear Systems, the ultimate resource for individuals and families who want to get the information they need to develop their life survival plans and plan for adventures. At Survival Gear Systems, we offer not only individualized products, but also complete survival packages ranging from basic to extreme. Our survival systems include products recommended by our trained survival experts, including food, water filtration, power sources, communication devices, emergency gear, survival shelter, survival clothing, and more. These systems are revolutionary in preparing families for catastrophic events without the need to do the research or shopping around themselves. We do the work for you. Visit us and experience SurvivalGearSystems.com. The ultimate wood-burning, collapsible survival and camping stove just got better. Designed for the prepper, survivalist, or weekend adventurer, the Under 6 Elite and the new Under 2.2 Elite Survival Stoves by SurvivalStoveWorks.com can cook meals in under 6 minutes. Cook your meals with just a few twigs and sticks, and without all the smoke and black soot, the Under 6 Elite weighs under 6 pounds, weighing even less than the new 2.2 Elite. Each of these high-quality survival stoves can be assembled in under a minute. Made right here in the USA, these stoves, even with all the extras, are still easy to store and transport in their own carrying cases. On sale now, with free shipping. Watch the videos. See both in action. Then, get yours now at SurvivalStoveWorks.com. SurvivalStoveWorks.com.
All right. So we are back. I'm pulling up my computer. All right, I'm Jay Fergie. I'm your host of A Family Affair. We have Samantha Biggers here as she is our special guest. She is actually a writer for Backdoor Survival, and we are talking about her homestead since my topic tonight is living the dream. Thank you, Flying. He had asked, and I put it in there, but I noticed I didn't put a good enough link. So we put in the chat www.backdoorsurvival.com, and Backdoor Survival actually aims, and make sure I'm saying this right, Samantha, I want to make sure from what I've read, is it's aimed basically to all walks of life as far as preparedness.
Yes. We don't really get into politics on our site. And, you know, some of the sites are very politicized, and that's great if that's what you want to do. But Backdoor Survival tries to just come at it from the philosophy that everybody needs to prep. It's not a politics game. It's everybody has the same basic needs and needs to have something on hand in case just even natural disasters. That's the first thing to prepare for. And if you're prepared for those, you're better prepared for everything.
No, I think that's great. We'll actually jump into a couple of your articles here in just a second, but I have a few questions in here. Flying Dutchman asked, have you heard 1 acre per cow? Is there a rule of thumb for sheep?
That's a complicated question because it depends on the size of your sheep, the size of your cow, and how lush your pasture is. Like here, sure, I could keep a cow on an acre. But if you're out west and it's, you know, and it's more in Texas, or if you're in Texas where it's kind of scrubby, there's places where it's 1 cow per 100 acres. It depends on where you're at now. Sheep.
Right, and Shetland are actually quite small.
Yeah, and they'll eat anything. You know, we barely use any hay. Like, we'll buy hay and put it out, and they just won't eat it. Like, if they can find something else, they will eat it. that they're very, I mean, if you look at the Shetland Islands, there's like nothing there hardly. It's really,
right, and
it's
they're very hardy.
Very
they do great with different temperatures.
Yeah, they get kind of hot in the summer and they'll just lay in the shade, but they do pretty good here, even though it gets 90s and stuff. But our sheep, we go back and forth because it really depends on how good your pasture is, how many it's you have to kind of base it on your land. Now, we've got 11 acres, but right now we've only got, I guess we've got like 9 sheep at the moment, and a few of those we're going to butcher. But
right,
there's no easy, you have to look at your property.
I understand. There actually leads Melinda Lee was actually asking, just curious to what people think of what is the perfect size homestead? I mean, is 11 acres enough for y'all? Is it too much? Do you, you know, is that a good size for y'all?
Well, we had to realize that, like, there's no such, you can't be entirely self-sufficient. Like, that's not the goal. People get really stuck on the, I'm going to produce everything. And that's actually a mistake. You can't produce everything. People might not want to hear that, but you can produce a lot. But the idea is to produce, you can spread yourself too thin. You produce an excess of something so that you can trade or sell it so you can get other things that you can't produce. 11 acres is a lot to deal with at times, but it's not enough. Like, if we were raising cattle or something, we couldn't ever make much off of that. It's not enough. So you have to find something that you can get a lot of per acre if it's smaller. And like with grapes, you can get, well, we hope to get a lot, and when we did the research we were like, okay, well, that might work. But if we were trying to grow something else, if you have a lot of help, and part of it depends on time and money and how it's laid out, it gets really complicated. If you've got 20 acres of flat land, that's a lot easier. You can work that with machines. If it's all mountainous, it makes it a lot harder. So this keeps us really busy, but if you had a bigger family or something, then bigger might be better. And it depends on what you want to raise. If you want to raise cattle, then you need a lot of property, and this is enough for us.
Right. No, and that's understandable. I mean, for you guys, I'm sure that's a lot of work. Just an 11 acres, you know, when you think about it, especially on the terrain you're on, it's kind of probably a little more difficult to navigate than versus just a flat land or a slight slope versus a steep steep hillside.
Yeah, and we actually do have another smaller property down the road that was my grandmother's, and we haven't really, because we're so busy with this, had a chance to do everything we'd like down there. And it's just, if you're doing it all yourself, or two people are doing it yourself and on a budget, it's, you know.
No, I understand. So Highlander asked, do you have any deal with other local homesteading to trade?
I'm sorry, you cut out there.
Yeah, I know. Hold on, I'm trying to. Do you have any deal with other local homesteaders to trade? So I guess
what's
wanting to know is, with the fact that you can't do it all by yourself, if y'all barter or trade with other like-minded individuals.
No, they're pretty hard to find people to. I mean, as far as like work trade, I'm not sure if that's what they were getting at. That's pretty hard
Highlander,
to find people
can you be
that want to.
More specific, are you talking about goods or are you talking about actual work? We'll see what he posts. Let's see. So he's asking for goods. Do you ever trade meat for veggies or whatnot? Or like your sheep, you actually shear and send your fiber to be processed, correct?
Yeah, I have the wool for sale. This is the first time we've ever sold the finished yarn. But we really haven't did much trading in a long time. you know, we used to a little, you have to be careful with it. And there's, we've kind of stuck to ourselves a lot over the years, I have to say. Not because, well, you're too, we spent our 20s to be just working on this place, and we didn't go out and socialize a lot and everything. And I didn't go to public high school here, so I actually don't know a lot of people. And everybody I went to college with is, went off and did their thing. And I mean, maybe in the future we trade some and all, but with the sheep, we don't really, we get meat and hides and stuff, but we just haven't. I'm not saying it's not a good idea to trade with people, but there's not
maybe
a lot of younger people around here
article.
That are really doing a lot. There's not really a lot of younger people around here doing what we're doing, and a lot of the older farmers have stopped farming for the most part, and it's just, we're right outside of Asheville too, and it's actually started growing around us some, so.
Oh, wow. Well, maybe that's something we'll see an article on.
And that's part of it, too. You have to kind of change with the times. When I was a teenager here, this place was not, there wasn't as many people around. There was, it was just a little bit wilder, and it's not now.
So, Flying Dutchman asked, do you still have outside jobs? Which, Flying, I don't know if you came in on the intro. She is actually a writer for Backdoor Survival. And then your husband still works as well, correct? Other than the work y'all have to do on your homestead?
Yeah. He helps a lot of times, like, taking care of my dad. My dad's, like, very disabled from Vietnam. Like, he really can't do a lot for himself. He's got an amputation, and he got sprayed with Agent Orange really heavily, and he has shrapnel.
Oh, God.
He's legally blind, and he just had a lot of health issues that really escalated over the years. And so we have to do that. And we also, before that, my grandmother had to have someone take care of her. So we've spent some time, you know, doing a lot of elder care so they don't have to go to rest homes. I mean, people have to do that, I understand, but old Southern families try to keep them out as long as we can.
That's very true. It's very true. We'd rather take care of them and see them go somewhere else. But you,
yeah,
but
my grandma.
Primary...
Hmm?
Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I just said my grandma was one of those ladies that was born in a cabin, and we didn't know how old she was, and I found out she was older when I was taking care of her. That was eye-opening, so.
Oh, wow. As far as work, you're the one who actually brings in quite a bit of an income as far as with your writing, correct?
Yeah, and my husband, he does other jobs, like with, you know, does some construction stuff and things like that, but we just kind of do a little bit of everything.
And Melinda Lee actually makes a good point in here in chat. She says there's a disconnect from the community. Younger people spend most of their time on social media. Melinda Lee, I have to say you are absolutely correct. Most of my coworkers do not understand my lifestyle or my way of living, let alone the rest of us. So the fact that when Sam said that there's not many younger people who farm or do this sort of thing, you're absolutely right. It is not something the newer generations would even consider doing. This is much more of a, I would consider a traditional or an older lifestyle. But I prefer it for my family. I imagine you feel the same way for yours as well.
Yeah, people are afraid to try a lot of times when it comes to farming and stuff, because none of it's easy, and you don't start at the top. There's a real tendency people want to start at the top with everything, and
no.
They get discouraged. Like, yeah, I've had people come up here and they get really irritated when they can't do the same things immediately that we are doing or something. And it's just like, well, it took years to learn this or to get into, you know, you have to get into physical shape too. I couldn't even get up this hill without huffing and puffing when I first came back from Alaska. I was 30 pounds heavier. I had an office job. I had to eat terrible up there because there wasn't Ketchikan, Alaska. We had to have food flown in from Washington. We finally got a CSA going. from Washington State that would fly food up to all the residents there if you wanted to get a box. And that was, that really helped. But, you know, coming from there to here, it took a while. We did it and stuff, but you have to get through that tough part, and people can do it.
No, it's work. Actually, Flying Dutchman makes a good point with the fact that it's work. He says there aren't too many that prep either, and some wish they did, especially during the shutdown. And he's right. You see so many people wishing they had it by the time it's too late to eat. Oh, well, not that it's too late, but well into it that it makes it more difficult. And you're right. You have to start from the bottom. I mean, first time we started running our own garden, you know, very first time you try it, it's a learning experience because, hey, this row didn't work out this year. Let's try it again differently next year. You're learning every time you do it.
And you can't, there's this instant gratification kind of idea, you know, too, where like, okay, it took us years to build our house. It took years, but because in the beginning you can buy $500 worth of boards and it'll take you a week to work through them or something because you're doing more complicated stuff, like you're laying your floor some. But then when you get to the finished work, you can go and spend $500, get all the light fixtures for the inside of your house. Those will be wired in 2 or 3 hours, and there you've blown your budget for a while. So you got to go find something else to do.
Right.
But that's what you have to, if you don't want to take out a mortgage, well, sometimes you just go, you go find other things that don't cost a lot to do that are productive, like clear trees or do some shiitake mushroom logs or, you know, it's an exercise in patience.
No, absolutely. And that's like, especially with what you were saying as far as cost, like for Canon, you're going to spend quite a bit initially as far as supplies, but afterwards it's when it's going to start paying for itself. Like 3 years later, yeah, we're still buying a few extra lids or jars here and there, but elsewise we've actually saved more money now and not, didn't have to put any out this year when we were Canon because of everything we bought the first year. So it pays mm-hmm. for itself over time. And people don't realize is, yes, you may have put out $100 to $500 now, but 5 or 10 years down the road, guess what? You've actually made your money back thrice-fold just in the work that you've accomplished from it.
Mm-hmm. And, yeah, and anything, too, there's a learning curve. You're going to make mistakes, and you're going to spend money and look back and be like, oh, I could have done it this way and saved. Well, whatever. If we all knew the future, it would be a lot easier probably. But maybe you're gonna sometimes be like, oh, man, I should have done that different. And there's things around here where it's like, oh, we can't, like, look back 60 years later and be like, oh, we should have done it that way. It's like we were young, we were learning, we did it the way and it turned out. You know?
Right. And real quick, and then we'll go, I wanted to speak a little bit on some of your articles, but Melinda Lee said, plus you know what's in your food and where it came from, which prime example on this, being able to can or garden or like you do, raise, you know, whatever crop it is, you know, you raise grapes and mushrooms, being able to know what you're eating, being able to know where it came from and what's in it, honestly, in today's point in time is, for me, a comfort that a lot of people don't get anymore because it seems like every other week there's 2 or 3 food recalls because of salmonella or some sort of contamination. At least in this way, when you raise a garden or you raise your animals, you know what they're ingesting. You know what there's in their body. You're cleaning it. You're harvesting it. And especially with your meat, I don't know if you do it. I know we do it. When I help my friend cull her animals, first thing I check is the organs, is the liver gut spots, how's the look at the heart. If those are great, then we know that the animal wasn't sick, you know, that we couldn't see, we know it wasn't sick internally, and the meat's still good. So, you know, that's a big one. I actually even had a gentleman tell me today, knowing where your food comes from is something that's lost on the newer generation. So, sorry, she struck a note, and I felt like it needed to be addressed.
Yeah, it tastes different too. I mean, like if you look,
it has
pastured pork. We've raised some really big pigs before because we had a source of like free antibiotic free milk. So we were feeding these really big pigs, and we got one up to like 900 pounds or something. I saw three pigs drink 45 gallons of whole milk in 24 hours. They will put on some weight. And the meat is actually like darker. You get this pale, like spongy pork a lot of times at the grocery store because it's raised in confinement when it's out. And if you want to, like, I've rendered a lot of lard. It's really hard to get a lot of fat on your pigs when they're just running out because they're getting a lot of exercise and they're not necessarily eating the same. You're not eating the commercial diet. So the milk, though, would put fat on them. I got a lot of lard off of one of those pigs.
No, and you're right. There is a completely different taste between a farm-raised and a store. And it's the same with chicken. You know, the chicken in the store grows so fast, it has no flavor whatsoever. And a farm or, you know, free-range chicken from the homestead tastes amazing compared to what you get in the store. So, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, we'd never butchered a pig before. We were living in the camper, and that was, I guess, back in 2009 or so, and there was coyotes around then, and there wasn't a fence, so we actually had to hang it in the shell of the house. I was a little bit horrified, we just built, and I put plastic down and stuff, but it was like, oh, so here's this pig hanging in the shell of my, or the house we were constructing, but we did what we had to do. It was really cold, it snowed that time, and oh, yeah.
Wow. No, I mean, that's amazing. And that right there was probably a learning process as far as if y'all skinned it or just removed the hair. Like, that one is always a big choice to go between.
We scalded them for sure and scraped them. But you can, like, lay burlap sacks down and pour hot water over that, and that'll keep the...
Right. Oh, that's what we did with the pigs this last time is we didn't use sacks, we did towels, but it worked up much the same way. So a Highlander in the chat says you christened your house with pig blood.
Yeah, I know. It's like if everybody ever like pulls up a hardwood floor, there's going to be a big stain.
But
it's a big community event, you know, a hog killing in the South. So I had all of these older guys and from the neighborhood, and they thought it was a big fun thing, and they were drinking beer, and like all the plastic was getting moved, and I'm just like, oh, you know, they were really excited because nobody done something like that in a while around here, and yeah, it was quite a thing.
So this show is going by so fast. I'm loving having you. So I wanted to go ahead and cover some of your articles so our listeners could see what it is you do and what Backdoor has to actually offer. And all these articles, like I loved your article on giving the gift of resilience to your children. You know, that's something big for our show here is, you know, prepping with children, showing them to have that independence. That was a big one.
I didn't do that one. That was actually one of our other writers, and I'm not sure. No, that's fine. I'm glad you like it. We have a lot of different voices on the Backdoor Survival.
Oh, you do. Like, I know you wrote this one. I know, you know, and also it had your pictures, which I read this one with the laundry kit. I loved the laundry kit and your model and pictures.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, I've been taking – I actually bought a survival course from Selco over at the Organic Prepper, and he lived through the Balkan War, and he always talks a lot about hygiene and how that was one of the things during that, you know, a city cut off from everything was just people couldn't stay clean. And that is so important to your health. And how would you do clothes? I mean, I know part of it is you just got to cut back on your you can wear pants for a few days. You don't have to change your clothes every single day, every single item. A lot of people are used to that because of work or whatever. But an emergency, no. So you can, when you're talking about doing laundry during an emergency, you can keep yourself clean. It's going to be work, but I this little washer that I've got, the Wonder Wash, I could wash a week's worth of T-shirts, even if I'm changing my T-shirt every single day in 5 minutes with the rinsing and the. So that's pretty good.
So as far as with your articles, I mean, I've read several of them, and I love how much you put into you, but you actually write. What it seems like what you write is stuff that you're – rephrase. Let me say this in a way where I can make sense. You don't write something about something that you wouldn't have been able to have experienced or gone through yourself, correct? Like with the washing kit, that was something that you tried out for yourself. Some of these other articles you were able to relate in some way with yourself in a life event, right?
Yeah, you know, I tried to actually go out and do stuff. Yeah,
right. So
I think
feel,
it's
and
important.
That's what
to,
I've noticed in your articles.
Yeah, you need to be an active participant in your articles. You know, that's one of those things I guess, let's see, how would I say this? Like Hunter S. Thompson was always that. He was always in his articles. He was part of his writing, you know, like that type of journalism always fascinated me.
Right. You're involved. You actually, from what I could read, you actually put yourself into it, which is a big deal. Someone, Highlander, asked, do you ever use sheep fat and ash to make lye soap? So do you ever use your animals to make your own soap? Sorry.
No, I haven't done that yet.
Article.
Yeah, no, I actually have not done that. I thought about doing that, you know, but I've got like some tallow that I rendered from some beef fat and things like that put away, but I just have not got around to that.
No, I lost my train of thought for a second and had too many words going all at once. So, to the listeners, check out backdoorsurvival.com. They have it. It's on Facebook, and they've got some great articles that they post. I want to say y'all post daily, correct? At least one article a day?
Yeah, and they're not always mine. Like mine will have my name at the top. At the moment, it'll say like Survival Woman at the top when it's a guest post, but at the very end of the post is the actual like author's name and such. We're working on changing that to where the author's name will be right at the top, the guest post,
okay,
and the regular writers. But that's right now, that's how it is. We've been trying to cover just a variety of stuff here lately. I've been trying to take on some more of the tougher aspects of like the end of the world as we know, or not the end of the world as we know it, like, but you know, just some of the harder aspects of survival.
More serious. Or, right. The
like,
harder stuff.
Like when the meds run out.
Thing.
Like my latest one was when the meds run out. What's going to happen when people start having to go off medications, and what can they do now to prepare for that? Or people think everyone's going to go crazy, you know, on certain things, and it's a little more complicated than that. That was a hard one for me to write in a way, but
I know, and I read it, and for me, from that aspect, I actually work in pharmaceuticals, and I work for a private mental health pharmacy, and so the number of patients that are actually on, and I don't mean for it to sound in any way ugly, on antipsychotics. And it's not that these people are crazy or that there's something wrong with them, but they have an illness. And not having those medications will really greatly affect their comprehension or how they're going to be able to deal with it. So, I mean, for me, that was one of those things where people don't take into effect, you know, what happens to their body when they stop taking something that they've had for years, you know, how it affects them. How are they going to be able to handle something that they are in a new aspect and viewing it in a way they haven't been able to because of the fact the medicine helps so much. So, yeah, I felt like that one really – and you even brought up the fact of what happens when a person's body – and when I say DTs is when they start coming off of a medication that they've had. You know, you actually went into the details and you actually listed off
some of the medicines that many people take to help, just like a lot of mood inhibitors, you know, help to make serotonin. You listed, I mean, I hope you don't mind me taking from your article right now.
Oh,
but
no.
You mentioned a lot in the medicines people are on, like Celexa, Lexapro, Prozac, Zoloft, Vibrid. You know, these are very common medications, and these people don't realize what's going to happen to their body when they just stop taking it, especially those who have been on them for years. And I love that you actually listed in here a reference where you got it from, you know, the nausea, the dizziness, the being lethargic, the fever and shakes, you know, that these are things I don't think people really think of. And I love that the article brought attention to real life situations that people right now probably only consider, oh, well, I only need to stock up on food, or I only need to stock up on ammo. Well, you need to look at every aspect of prepping. It's not just one or two items. You've got to look at it as, how are you going to handle a situation as a whole, especially if you're reliant upon blood pressure medication or your mood inhibitor or whatever it may be.
Yeah, and there's also a tendency sometimes amongst a certain type of person to automatically be like, well, those people are going to get weeded out, and I hope it happens fast. And it's like, well, people hide stuff pretty well. What are you going to do when that's your kid or your someone that you actually care about? Are you going to kick
spouse?
Them out or something? Like, are you going to...
Right.
It's easy to say that now, but there's a lot of things that's going to come to light during an emergency that were hidden before. And
right, and things you didn't know about the people who were closest to you is, oh, I didn't realize you had a heart condition. Well, guess what? Without that medication, their heart condition may not be in check. So I like, even though, as you say, they're the more intense stuff to talk about, I feel like you're really hitting it on the head as far as bringing awareness into your article, because you can't, on some of these subjects, especially like this, you can't just tiptoe around about it. Sometimes it's a big pill to swallow, but, I mean, on something like this, you can't sugarcoat the severity of a situation. And I love that your articles do that. I love that Backdoor Survival brings attention to it. And I just looked at the time. I cannot believe our time has disappeared. We are down to 1 minute. So I am sorry to have to cut it so short. I could actually talk to you for a whole nother hour.
Yeah. Well, we'll have to do it again sometime. And...
Yes, yes. I think for sure, if you're up for it, we're going to bring Miss Samantha back, and we will talk about some other great things. And maybe she may even have some articles, who knows, who matches with it. Hi, baby. So with that being said, Miss Samantha, I'm so glad to have had you. Thank you for coming on the show and speaking with us. Check out her page. Well, check out backdoorsurvival.com. Check out her article. She even has a page on there. I've put the links in my description on our homepage. Samantha, is there anything you want to say before I close out the show?
Just thanks for listening to me, everybody. This is actually my first podcast, so hopefully I did okay.
You're doing great. You would never have guessed. All right.
But,
well, that being said, everybody, it's great having you. I hope you have a great weekend. Check out Backdoor Survival, and I promise you, you will be seeing Miss Samantha again. And everybody, have a good night.
All right, everybody.
Today's broadcast has come to you through the courtesy of the Prepper Broadcasting Network. See our hosts, show schedules, archive programs, and more at PrepperBroadcasting.com. Thanks for listening.